This is your host, Morgan Reynolds, on the Dynamic Duo, where you can catch Jim Fetzer Tuesdays through Thursdays and Kevin Barrett, the Boy Wonder, on Mondays and Fridays. I, Morgan Reynolds, am substituting this week for Jim Fetzer, who must be in the Caribbean, the coast of Alaska, or some similar cruise destination. So hope you enjoy your vacation, Jim. It's quite an honor to fill in for Jim during these three middle days of the week. And here Wednesday, hump day, I have my guest, Jeff Hill. I call him Cold Call Fame Boy. He's the 9/11 cold caller who's just done some great work. And yesterday, I had a guest, the pilot John Lear, and Jeff has done something on many aspects of the plane arguments on 9/11, and one of them that flared up has been going the last few months was, can a Boeing 767 really fly at 542 miles an hour near sea level as the National Institute of Standards and Technology maintains in its report back in September 2005, these extraordinary speeds that are claimed, for example, at the Pentagon, the Flight 77 supposedly came in at some 500 miles an hour. Yesterday, my guest, a wonderful experienced pilot, John Lear, maintain flat out. There's no way you can go 500 miles an hour in or better in one of these large Boeing airliners. And the reason is that these turbo fans that are 8 feet in diameter just basically choke on all that thick air, and it's like a propeller. It just begins to act as a brake almost. That's the way another engineer, Joe Keith, puts it. Well, Jeff Hill here has one of his many call operations involved interviewing two women at Boeing. As I recall, one was a public information officer, another one was an engineer. And Jeff, in his disarming, innocent, approachable manner, got both to laugh or scoff at the idea that a Boeing airliner like these could fly that fast. So let's bring Jeff Hill in and find out who Jeff is, first of all, and then we'll try and review a lot of his work on the planes and maybe other aspects of 9/11. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hi, Dr. Reynolds. Thank you very much.
Hey, call me Morgan, Jeff.
Okay, well, Morgan, thank you very much. I just want to say it's an honor to be talking to you here today on the radio.
We're going to have some fun, and I think it's going to put out some entertainment and some wonderful information. Jeff, start by telling me a little about yourself.
Well, I guess I would consider myself one of the average Joes that are looking into the whole 9/11 issue. But I found now, after a few years, I guess I could have a master's in 9/11 research and a PhD in common sense when it comes to the story about it.
Hey, that PhD in common sense, I think, is the number one credential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We know.
But are you sound like a young man. Are you in your 20s?
No, actually, I'm 33 now.
Oh, okay. Well, mm-hmm. I call that young. Hey, you told me the other day you were involved in opening a bar up there in Sault Ste. Marie?
Yeah, we're back in the bar business. My friend's parents decided to open up another bar, and we'll see how that goes. Capitalism at its finest.
Very good. I love entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. We call it the other place. If anybody ever gets down to Sault Ste. Marie, Canada, and wants to check out a nice spot, you can always come over to our bar.
The other place. Yeah, I was up there a couple years ago on a motorcycle trip, and we stayed one night there and, of course, toured the locks, and I love that area up there, and in August especially. I don't feature myself in January up there on Lake Superior. What's the temperature today?
Right now, it's, I don't know, but it's pretty cold. It's a lot of wind going on. Well, we don't have no snow, if you can imagine that.
I grew up in Wisconsin, so I left when I got out of school. So, okay, Jeff, let's go to the 9/11 issue. So how did you get interested in 9/11?
Well, I guess my first introduction to it was I was just searching around on a torrent tracker on Conspiracy Central. And I had seen a video of World Trade Center 7. And the description of it, of how it hadn't been hit by any planes, the whole controversy going around in circles concerning Larry Silverstein using the term pull it,
mm-hmm.
talking about the building going down. And I guess the first phone call I did was,
so how long have you been at this? Just a couple of years?
Yeah, I would say about 3 years now.
Okay.
And I recorded a phone call because I wanted to show it to my friends, and I knew they wouldn't believe me about anything, you know, because it is a hard thing to grasp and a hard thing to believe, but just even asking the basic question of what does pull it mean, and they define the term pull it as being used in controlled demolition.
Mm-hmm. In the industry.
It's an industry term.
Been disputed, but it's hard to have any other interpretation of what he said.
Yeah, exactly.
They had some kind of an explanation on the U.S. State Department, maybe among other places, where, he was referring to the FDNY crew allegedly in the building. And why would you use a term like that? Pull it. And besides, in the context, his sentence then goes on to say, and we watched the building, demolished, or words to that effect.
Exactly. The whole way he uses it in the context of the sentence should be enough,
yeah.
But it's just, there's so many circumstantial things about 9/11, and not just being one of them.
By the way, that some people believe in my camp that maybe that was an Easter egg that we were supposed to find and feature with the idea that you don't need to look any further. It was a conventional demolition, whereas there's some good reasons to believe that just as the Twin Towers and other parts of the WTC were dustified by some kind of exotic weapon, something extraordinary, that might well have happened to 7, too. But, okay, go on. That's how you started.
Yeah. And it just from there, I looked into it more and more, and it became more complex than I initially thought it was. And then I'm sure, as you're well aware of, it gets really complex. And realizing that 9/11, the whole official story behind it, is a lie, is one thing. But then actually finding out more about the elements of the story,
right,
is very mind-boggling.
It is, and that's part of the fascination. Well, of course, the basic thing that drives me is I can't let the perps get away with it. But there are so many moving parts. It's a fascinating scientific and criminal investigation with all these moving parts and trying to crack how it happened, not just prove that the government account can't possibly be true.
It definitely is.
Our music from the Beatles. We'll be back on the other side of the break. This is the Dynamic Duo with Jim Fetzer on Tuesdays through Thursdays and Kevin Barrett on Mondays and Fridays. This is Morgan Reynolds sitting in for Jim this week. And our guest today is Jeff Hill of Cold Call fame and PumpItOut.com. Jeff, you were going to take us to your first call that you were going to prove to your friends that something is amiss here. You were going to record it for them. What happened?
Oh, well, yeah. Basically, I just called the Controlled Demolitions Incorporated and asked them if they could define the term pull it for me.
Yes.
And the lady that answered the phone, she got up and she went away, and I guess she asked some people, and she came back and said, well, pull it means to pull the building down. That was simple enough and good enough for me. I said, thank you very much and have a nice day. So right there, there was
Seems like a real common sense solution to a controversy, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, the whole thing, the whole 9/11 issue reminds me of something I heard when I was little, where a transport got stuck under an underpass, and it was wedged into the underpass, and all these people were trying to figure out how they could unstick this transport from the underpass. And some little girl comes along and says, why don't you just let the air out of the tires? You know, it's such a simple thing that it's sometimes very easy to miss. And that's where we get into where you're an expert in, is the whole airplane issue.
That's right. Well, and that's an acquired expertise as well. I haven't had statics, dynamics, et cetera, or engineering or aeronautical engineering, nor am I a pilot, but I'm with you. If you've got some common sense and think for yourself and investigate something, you can discover what's going on just as well as anybody else can.
I think that the problem we have here with this whole, what they call the 9/11 truth movement, is the fact that there's a lot of followers that just blindly follow their heroes or their idols, listen to everything they say, but they don't look at anything themselves.
Yeah, so
I think as the great Bill Cooper once said, listen to everybody, read everything, believe nothing until you verify it yourself.
Oh, amen, amen. That's great. Yeah, I get frustrated with the people who don't think for themselves, and they just, it seems, tune out. They've already chosen their leader whom they're going to follow. So, for example, even within the 9/11 half-truth movement, you have people that seem to believe, well, yeah, the government lied about A, they lied about B, they lied about C, but not D, because I saw the airplane on TV.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. We need to think about this and look at some evidence, don't we? Well, that's a very good, that was your first call, and that was not too long ago, was it?
Well, that was, I guess, a couple of years ago now.
Okay. So then where did you go? You got in deeper and deeper into this. So what was the reaction to your first call?
Well, people liked it. They understood it, and it was something that everybody was talking about at the time. And like even Alex Jones appreciated it for what it was.
And he hasn't appreciated everything you've done, I take it?
No, not everything.
Okay. So what happened with your so your friends liked it, and so the wider internet world liked it?
Yes, and even, like, people where I live, like, they started to, you know, listen, understand it more and more. And, you know, I never thought in my life I would ever be called a conspiracy theorist or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the farthest thing from my mind. But I guess once it's you know, you categorize it in with everything else, It's just as hard to believe as most other things.
Well, and then, hey, it's a matter of which is the right conspiracy theory.
Exactly.
Since, hey, the definition of a conspiracy is simply two or more people agreeing on to commit some heinous or illegal or unethical act.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's not... in Canada there... where you're quite near the U.S. line, and much of Canada is heavily influenced, shall we say, by the U.S. Culture, etc. Is it the same kind of Americans have been trained to reject anything called a conspiracy theory and somehow embrace coincidence and accidents and blunders to explain so many things? Is that the same kind of regimen you have in Canada, that you reject conspiracy theories out of hand?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely the way it is, and I see, like, people are more or less manipulated into that way of thinking. Because as soon as you hear the word conspiracy, what's the next word you think of is theory, right?
Right. And then you just have a laugh or scorn or...
Yeah, and it's an easy way to just dismiss the whole issue with a laugh or a scorn. and be on your way.
Yeah, one of the things is, well, if that's the case, you know, thousands would have been involved and somebody would have ratted it out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what was your next little adventure? Where'd you go next?
I think the next one after that, I was still concentrating on the World Trade Center 7. And I ended up calling Mr. Danny Jewenko, myself. He's the controlled demolitions expert in the Netherlands. That was he's on video saying how World Trade Center 7, this was a demolition, or it was definitely not fire.
Okay.
So a lot of people in the limited hangout, as they call it, also accept Danny Jewenko's statements too.
And what he did was confirm what you saw in the video. So he was a dissenter or a critic of the official story on 7, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And basically the way he put it was, if you're in America and you're working in, you know, in that country, and there's an official story saying something, you are not going to dare go against that official story, or you'd be out of business. More or less.
Meaning the demolition companies?
Well,
or just everybody in America?
Well, I guess more or less, I guess he might have meant the demolition companies, but I guess more or less everybody. Like any professional in any professional job or anything would have to kind of comply with the way
right.
things are.
Well, there certainly is that at work big time, isn't there? It's career suicide to come out against the official conspiracy theory that the government and media push, isn't it? It doesn't
yeah.
help.
And that's why we're lucky to have people like yourself and Dr. Fetzer and Dr. Judy Woods and other people with credentials to actually be speaking up.
And we need people from every walk of life. Yeah, the thing that I really lament is, where are the engineers and scientists on this? Okay, well, we'll be back on the other side of the break. More from Jeff Hill. And we're back. This is Morgan Reynolds on the Dynamic Duo, where you can catch Jim Fetzer Tuesdays, Brew Thursdays, and Kevin Barrett, the Boy Wonder, on Mondays and Fridays. This afternoon, we're talking with Jeff Cold Call Hill of PumpItOut.com fame. And tomorrow I will have economist Mark Thornton from the Ludwig von Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama, to talk about gold, silver, the economy, the financial meltdown that seems to be underway. And we'll review the entire economic landscape, and especially the Federal Reserve, its shady origins and inflationary monetary policies. So, Jeff, you were discussing your second cold call. What was number three?
I'm not quite sure how I ordered them.
Okay.
But there's been a lot of calls to a lot of people over the past few years.
Well, let's take any middle call. You had so many interesting successes here.
Well, there was a few to NIST over different issues. I know you have a ongoing battle with NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Over their report. And,
so let's talk about a couple of those.
Well, we have what did we have? We had Mr. Bill Pitt.
Yes.
Who I called about the airplane. Well, basically, I was calling him about the, we had a controversy of where one of the videos and a picture came from concerning the second tower hit.
Okay.
And one very famous picture was taken by a lady named Carmen Taylor.
Yes.
And she was using, this is the funniest part with this one, is she was using a Sony Mavica FD series camera that uses a floppy disk to record the pictures on.
Okay.
And if she's getting a picture of a pristine, no blur or anything of a plane just about to enter a building at over 500 miles an hour, that's more or less impossible.
The camera you didn't think was of high enough quality to pull that off?
No, I used the exact same camera she used before, and it used to upset me because the picture quality always turned out pretty.
Okay.
And it took so long to record the picture onto the disc before you could take another picture.
Mm-hmm.
So she has her four pictures, one of the plane just about to go into the building, and then she has her picture of the, what they term the ghost face in the smoke, which happens about 5 seconds later.
Oh, yes.
After the after her first shot, and it takes approximately 10 seconds before you could take another picture with the camera.
Mm. Didn't seem possible.
No, not at all. That was a circumstantial. But that's circumstantial. Like, that's, you know, people could debate that forever if they wanted to. But and then you have the Michael Hezekani video footage of the second hit. I think.
Okay, did you try to call Carmen Taylor, or are you just dealing with Mr. Pitts at NIST?
Oh, well, sorry. The whole conversation started to revolve around where the people were when they took the picture, and even Mr. Pitts had said that some of the pictures, they didn't actually talk to the witnesses, they just had an outside contractor triangulate their approximate where they were approximately.
Mm.
So that's not very good work on the part of NIST.
No, it's interesting. On the videos, they assured in a letter to me regarding my request for correction under the Data Quality Act that, they interviewed all the photographers and know about the chain of custody of the videos, at least. But in this case, the pictures, they never interviewed her.
Oh, they had interviewed her, but they never interviewed Michael Hezekani.
Okay. All right.
An exact video replica of her still picture.
Yeah, isn't that strange?
Mm-hmm. And when I was talking with him, he tried to pass it off to some other guy, and then I talked to the other guy. He passed it back off to Bill Pitts, and then he had ended up saying that there was an outside contractor that just triangulated the areas that they were in.
Okay, so you talked to Hezekani, recorded that, right?
Yes, I talked to him, and he hung up on me right away. He didn't have anything to say.
Right.
He said,
You talked to this other gentleman who you'd been referred to by Hezekani?
I had just called and inquired with NIST about their NSTAR.
NSTAR 1.
Yeah. And they gave me the name of one guy, I forget who it was. It was Fahim something, and he referred me to Bill Pitts as he was in charge of that.
Oh, okay. You know that Fahim, I believe he's a NIST employee.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
And he was the one who referred me over to Bill Pitts, and then Pitts referred me back to him, and then they decided that it was actually an outside contractor that couldn't be named that did all the work on the video and picture footage. That
couldn't be named. Begins with an A and ends with an A. ARA in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's funny that they treat this like a national security secret. You know, this is a civilian contract.
And that's what I like about what you're doing. You're going after the contractors.
Yes.
As opposed to, like, say, the American government.
Right. Under this QI-TAM whistleblower type cause of action, legal cause of action, I go after the contractors as the agents of a fraud. They're co-participants in a fraud.
Yes, and my personal belief is it's not the American government, but the American government has been infiltrated by criminals that have manipulated everything, and they're well on their way to doing whatever they want because no one's paying attention to it.
Yeah, that's a lamentable part of all this is under the Constitution, we were supposed to be engaged in self-government, citizenship involved active participation. and Americans seem to have become a flock of couch potatoes.
Well, it's no better up here in Canada. We're all one big happy family of couch potatoes.
Yeah. Well, so the Herzog-Kahne conversation, that one's famous, where he referred you to CNN, right?
Yeah, he had referred me to CNN. He said all the rights were with CNN now, and he was not allowed to talk about anything concerning the video.
And he, and didn't you ask him some questions about whether the trees or 19 Rector, that building, would have blocked his view? I don't recall, but didn't you? You know, that's part of the controversy here about the authenticity of these pictures and videos.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, I didn't ask him about that, but there is a big controversy about the trees and the whole trajectory and
right
everything that's involved with the video, which just adds to the fakeness of it.
Right, yeah. Ace Baker, who is a note planer and a video fakery advocate, thinks that, that wasn't a problem in these pictures, but I can't render really an authoritative opinion about it. Well, we will be back with more conversation about the airplanes here on the other side of the break. This is the Dynamic Duo. We're back. Morgan Reynolds here filling in for Jim Fetzer, who you can catch Tuesdays through Thursdays, and Kevin Barrett, the Boy Wonder, on Mondays and Fridays. And this afternoon, we're talking with Jeff Hill from Canada of PumpItOut.com fame, and I call him the cold call guy. He's done some really great stuff, and one of them that is so useful is that he called Bill Pitts, an official at NIST, who was actually in charge of NIST gathering up all the pictures and videos, and they impress us all with how thorough they are, and we've got thousands of these pictures of what went down at the World Trade Center. We've got all these videos.
I don't have any problem with it.
Okay. Jeff, are you ready to play your interview there with the Pitts?
Yeah, since you brought it up, I just wanted to play a significant part of it where he was talking about how it's amazing to him that the building just ate the plane.
Absolutely, yeah. Play that for us.
Okay, here we go. It's about a 30-second clip.
So, I don't have any problem with it. I know you guys are still trying to figure out what's being, and I don't blame you, because I looked at it too, and to me, it's still amazing that the building just ate the plane. It's amazing that the fire didn't start initially when it first went through. You guys are correct about that. Obviously, the fuel got pretty deep into the building, it moved over to the ignition source. And it's miraculous when you look at it. Both planes were the same way, and I still feel the same way.
And just by that little bit of audio, you could tell that he's astonished by what he sees too, and he doesn't have an explanation for it, but
right.
In his mind, he has to find some way to, you know, justify what he's seeing.
Yeah, Jeff said, I've written this down as a transcript. Toward the end, Jeff said, as soon as the plane would hit the building, there should be an explosion, the wings should break, the tail section should be breaking or crumpling or something, and it just kind of seamlessly melds into the building. So Pitts replies, I don't dispute what you're saying. I've looked at the same stuff. I've seen exactly the same thing in 15 other videos. I don't know how they all could fake it. Well, wait a minute. Stop the tape right there. So Pitts concedes that one video could be faked, but he's arguing not 15 videos. Why not? Why, in the digital age, why can't you fake when we can see these first and 10 composite lines on football telecasts and on, right? And fakers had plenty of time because no penetration video of the South Tower was shown, quote, live or within seconds on 9/11. all they showed were a couple of these shots with a plane image disappearing behind an edge of a tower. So there, you know, it wasn't but hours, days, weeks, years later that these subsequent videos show up that are a little more complicated, right?
Exactly. There's all these videos that just appeared years later and stuff like that. But if a person actually looks at any of the video of the plane, they could see that it's almost like, as Web Ferry had described, they took it out of a pool of videos and they just cropped and manipulated different videos that were basically in the beginning just generic videos of the plane going in, if that makes any sense.
Well, are you saying they had a number of composite videos made up, and then they chose the worst of them or the best of them?
Well, what people have to realize is most of the videos that were taken from these so-called amateurs were video and animation artists.
They're actually professionals, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's Luke Cortesny, he's out of Montreal, who took a video of the plane going in, and just so happens that his perception of the building at the time was the same as a gentleman named David Hanshu from the New York Daily newspaper, who was standing right under the building and took a picture of the explosion, but never saw any planes, and is still to this day baffled by it.
Oh, you've talked to him.
I spoke with him, too. He doesn't really like to talk about it, but...
Well, you know, that leads to a more general observation, Jeff, namely that we are in the media capital of the globe in New York City, Manhattan, okay? This is the communication center of the world, the capital of communication. And you've got how many hundreds of news media personnel down there? Not one of them turned a camera or of any kind when hearing a thundering, roaring, high-speed airliner, wide-body, come into the South Tower. We don't have one, network shot or major media outlet person who is going to take responsibility. Isn't that amazing how these are all either amateurs or freelancers?
And that's almost like a fail-safe word that they put in when people find out about this.
Plausible deniability, it's called in Washington, D.C., right? It's like a moat. It's pretty easy to penetrate that says, oh, we're just innocent victims, too, when we broadcast this stuff. No, you're not.
Oh, not at all. Well, you and Joseph Keith had talked about the media is the head of the snake. They're directly involved in this whole...
They're the psyop arm of the powers that be.
Right.
And they can pretty much control what... Now, the Internet's a little out of control, so that's a wonderful new device we have to circumvent the mass media, and the alternative media are, to some extent, including GCN Live. But let's go back to the statement that you extracted or induced or heard, recorded from Bill Pitts. Pitts, who is a NIST official, says it's still amazing that the building just ate the plane. This is almost like admitting this is physically impossible. Don't you agree?
Well, I agree. It's totally physically impossible. There's no justification, no matter what you say, to justify these planes going in the way they did, the way we see them in the video. Like you and Joseph Keith had said, one of my favorite statements is aluminum planes don't meld into steel and concrete buildings. They crash against them.
Right. Yeah, that's directly from Joe.
And you see the plane. If anybody wanted to check out a web page where I've got a whole bunch of stuff there that you know, it's undeniable. It's pumpitout.com/planes.html. But that's where we get into what you were talking about. One of my favorite radio shows was yourself and Dr. Fetzer, and it was NIST versus Newton.
Right.
Where you had the TV show on that.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah, in your conversation with Bill Pitts of NIST, he also says, obviously the fuel got pretty deep into the building where there was an ignition source, and it's miraculous when you look at it. Well, this is another impossibility, that delayed fireball that we're supposed to say was a jet fuel explosion. When you see real planes crash, and we have some film on the internet, I've got one of a B-52. It's just instantaneous black fireball, and that's not what we saw at either tower. So we're going to wait on the break here, and we'll be back with Jeff Hill in a few minutes. This is your host, Morgan Reynolds, on the Dynamic Duo, where you can regularly catch Jim Fetzer Tuesdays through Thursdays and Kevin Barrett on Mondays and Fridays. Today, our guest is Jeff Hill, who's working on a Ph.D. in common sense, and I hereby grant him, since I have the power, of course, to grant a Ph.D. in common sense. Jeff has done some wonderful work on 9/11, particularly the planes, with his cold call tactics. Tomorrow, my guest will be Mark Thornton of the Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama. We're going to talk about the economy, the Federal Reserve, gold, silver. And Mark is a supporter of the Ron Paul campaign, so that'll play into it, too. Jeff, we're talking about John Lennon. Actually, I had a note about him. He says, living is easy with eyes closed. That seems to apply to the both the Canadian and American electorate or citizenry, doesn't it? Living is easy with eyes closed, huh?
It couldn't have been more true than it is today.
Yeah.
That's definite.
We were talking about the some of these Bill Pitts remarks, and at least I want to go back to that. And Pitts remarked that the building just ate the plane. And then he made a remark about something about, I guess it's kind of a sign of desperation that, what did he say here? He says, but the analysis we did on airplane impact said that if you had fuel tanks that were fully loaded, that's exactly what you might expect to see. Well, he's trying to peddle the story that we can burst through all this steel and concrete and disappear a plane. But if you go to the NCSTAR 1 report that we mentioned earlier that NIST brought out as their final report on the collapse, so-called, of the Twin Towers, they actually, on page 38, say that there was about 9,100 gallons of jet fuel, that's their estimate, evenly distributed between the inboard portions of the left and right wing tanks. Don't ask me how they claim to know this, but 9,100 gallons in a 767 of that model is only 38% full because the capacity is 23,980 gallons. So there's not a whole lot right here, but maybe the most amazing concession was regarding the fuel. He said in that clip that Jeff played in the prior segment, obviously the fuel got pretty deep into the building where there was an ignition source, and it's miraculous when you look at it. Well, I go to the dictionary. Miraculous is an adjective meaning of the nature of a miracle, and a miracle is defined as, quote, an event that appears unexplainable by the laws of nature and so is held to be supernatural in origin or an act of God, unquote. So Jeff has done an amazing thing here where he's got a NIST official to acknowledge that there's a miracle ongoing here in this this crash footage. Good work.
Well, they definitely have a serious problem if they're going to try and prove a fairy tale.
Yeah.
I mean,
Tinkerbell and lots of pixie dust. You know, well, that's amazing though, Jeff, because what you expose this as is it's nonsense on stilts, as the Brits would say. Nonsense on stilts, because NIST comes along, they're really kind of trying to bull rush America and the world by saying we've got 10,000 pages in our report. We spent $20 million. We have 200 experts. The experts agree we're all hired guns or their employees. It's just outrageous, isn't it?
It's beyond outrageous. Well, actually, you know how George Bush went on in his speech and he said, let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attack September 11th. The truth is outrageous. That's the whole thing.
Absolutely. That was, yeah, the perps had a long time to plan this, and more, I would be more worried as they were about the cover-up, because there would be people on the trail who don't believe the government on just about anything, and nothing that we can't prove independently. Right? There's no reason to accept it. It's like a scientific method. You don't accept theories that haven't been proven up or have some evidence on their behalf and some consistency with what we know already. So,
who was it that said the best way to control the opposition is to lead the opposition?
Right. Yeah, that's attributed to V.I. Lenin, and that's so right. Yeah. In other words, people don't wear big buttons and say, I'm a perp, aider, and abettor in the 9/11 truth movement, now do they?
Oh, not at all.
They say, I'm not wearing a white hat. You know, I'm one of the good guys. Well, but why are you doing the X, Y, and Z then? Why should I believe that?
Like, of course, some of the people that I talked to that I know 100% were lying to me. They sounded like the sweetest, nicest people you'd ever talk to. But you just knew they were totally fine.
Lying through their teeth. Well, it's not surprising that some of these people are well practiced in lying, is there? It's not a surprise.
But for
a NIST official, they spend all this money, have scientific and technical expertise. Well, the fact is, I can take this a bit further. I was chief economist, you know, as a political appointee in the Bush-Cheney administration at the U.S. Department of Labor in 2002 and 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm sorry, 2001, 2002, it was slipping into the past here pretty distantly, but you had political appointees in one of these cabinet-level departments like the Department of Labor. You have political appointees throughout, and including all the units, and they all answer to the secretary, and if you aren't doing it according to the way she, you're out. You know, you serve at the pleasure as a political appointee of the secretary who serves at the pleasure of the president. And that's what we have at NIST. We had the U.S. Department of Commerce. NIST is a unit in the Department of Commerce. And Don Evans, one of the close Texas buddies of the president, was the Secretary of Commerce from the inauguration January 20, 2001, until 2005 in February. So Don Evans supervises NIST, okay? The NIST people are now all have defense backgrounds. They're all politically bought and paid for, you know. So, and anything politically sensitive, NIST is they've got to handle. They've got to come up with the predetermined right political conclusion. So that's what we have in this NIST report.
They have to find a way to prove the story that they're told.
Right.
Which is,
yeah. And it's just appalling. Of course, I'm a little naive, but, you know, I still believe in the verities, the classical virtues. So, well, let's go, past NIST and Pitts. What's the next call that, or angle that you work that comes to mind?
Well, I think, the meat and potatoes of the whole thing was the problems with the videos.
Mm-hmm.
when it comes to, like you've stated before, Newton's laws, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right?
All right. Number three. Yes.
And we also have objects tend to keep on doing what they're doing unless acted upon by an unbalanced force.
Right. That's the first law. Absolutely.
Well, we've got two broken laws of reality on 9/11.
Yeah, classical physics, you know, basic physics, apparently we're supposed to believe we're suspended for 17 minutes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty outrageous. Well, the Beatles are singing us off stage, and we'll be back after... This is your host, Morgan Reynolds, on the Dynamic Duo, where you can catch Jim Fetcher most Tuesdays through Thursdays, and Kevin Barrett, the Boy Wonder, on Mondays and Fridays. I'm substituting for Jim this week, middle week, and I've got Jeff Hill, who's quite a fun guest. We're exploring his work on pumpitout.com, in which he cold calls various people involved in 9/11 and gets some striking things. Tomorrow, my guest will be Mark Thornton, an economist at the Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama, and we'll talk the economy as well as Ron Paul. Okay, Jeff, one of the things that interests me most about your calls, and maybe we can go here, was your calls to the Boeing Corporation. Asking about whether these kinds of speeds that the official accounts allege were really achievable at these low altitudes near sea level. What happened there?
Yeah, that was a call in regards to some questions Joe Keith had about the speed of the plane.
Right, and Joe Keith is a retired software engineer in the aerospace industry.
And he had worked on the shaker system for Boeing, and he was talking about resonant frequencies and the speeds and the shaking up of the planes. And he said he had emailed some people, and he couldn't get very many answers, so I just decided to call and see
okay.
who I could get to.
Let me fill that in, because, you know, Joe actually, as I understand it, he received a retirement check from Boeing, although he was never a Boeing employee per se, but he worked for... aerospace companies that Boeing acquired subsequently, and they acknowledged his first contact questioning, you know, what kind of speed does Boeing officially say these aircraft can do at low altitude, and then that was, he badgered them, but he never heard back, and that's what a lawyer would call an admission.
I have an interesting clip we could play here.
Okay,
Leslie Hazard of Boeing, she is the chief spokeswoman for Boeing, and just by her reaction, you could tell that it's a ridiculous question that I'm asking.
Okay, go play that.
Well, the question is, I think it's probably a rather simple one, is it has to do with the maximum speed of a 767-200 at 700 feet altitude.
Oh, boy.
Like I had asked some people, and they assumed it would be about 250 miles an hour.
That sounds pretty likely, because 35,000 feet is 530 miles.
So there's no way that it could be going 500 miles an hour at 700 feet altitude then.
Okay, let's put that down.
Well, I had talked to an aerospace engineer, and he had helped design the shaker system for Boeing that tested for resonant frequencies and stuff, and he said that there was no way that it could be, a plane could go 500 miles an hour at 700 feet altitude.
Yeah, it would be like a rocket.
The air is too thick or something. Something to do with the engines or something.
I think you're safe to go with what this other fellow told you, because...
So you'd agree with him that you wouldn't be able to do 500 miles an hour at 700 feet altitude?
Yeah, because I think there's a lot to what he said about how thin the air gets at higher altitudes, which is why we fly at higher altitudes.
So just in that little clip, I think her reaction with the laughter and everything.
And then she explicitly said, not a chance. to fly 500 miles an hour at 700 feet.
Well, that just attributes another impossibility to the plane. We already have the fact that it defies the laws of physics. Now we have the fact that it defies the laws of speed and everything. Like, it's just, the whole thing's ridiculous.
So, yeah, to go back to the physics issue, it's like somebody posted on a forum, America fell for the Roadrunner trick.
I like the picture you have of the Roadrunner cutout on the building.
You know, the whole thing, yeah, but until you start, you know, one of the, here's one of the problems, it's a sociological observation I'm making here, but it's like on 9/11 itself, we actually have a radio personality who hears this report regarding an airplane hit on one or both of the Trade Center towers. This was WBAI. And as the guy's reporting this, there was this stifled giggle. And he says, and there's airplane-shaped holes in the Twin Towers. And even despite the gravity of this situation and the murderous attacks, you know, it's just, you could see, hear it in his voice that he stumbled over this airplane-shaped holes. You know, the physics are wrong in so many respects that that's not the way crash or collisions look.
No, it's impossible.
They don't make an outline of themselves when they go through a wall or a fence or whatever. You know, it's just, that's not the way collisions work.
And even if you look, like I'm looking right now, at pictures of the buildings with the holes, both the first tower and the second tower, the steel girders are not broken through where the wing should have been.
No. Yeah, the holes have a rough airliner shaped outline, but yeah, they're too small. Oh, and they're small vertically as well as horizontally. They're way undersized. And you're right, there aren't enough broken columns to disappear the plane.
And that's the thing, when the plane hits, as soon as it touched the building, it would have started to crumple and break and twist and bend.
Oh, yeah. And like you say, you fling the tail. John Lear was pointing out that the tail has a lot of structural strength on its own, but it can break off from that fuselage. And furthermore, the tail on a 767 Boeing is 49 feet. There's no way that, where is the tail? You know, you don't have a hole to accommodate it. So where is it? And of course the engines are another, that's just laughable where they planted a couple of those dinky, parts.
Under the scaffolding on.
Yeah. You know, whoop, hey, you know, David Copperfield's gonna pull the canvas off from, this part. Oh yeah, this came right out of the tower, flew right, three blocks down here.
Well, I think anybody that's interested in learning about what the reality of it is, they should watch Genghis's video. It's called 9/11 Taboo.
Okay, we'll plug that on the other side of the break. This is your host, Morgan Reynolds, on the Dynamic Duo, where you can catch Jim Fetzer Tuesdays through Thursdays, and Kevin Barrett, the Boy Wonder, on Mondays and Fridays. I'm sitting in for Jim Fetzer this week. And my guest today is Jeff Hill from Sault Ste. Marie, Canada. Tomorrow it'll be Mark Thornton, economist, Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama. Jeff, you know, you're a guy that impresses me. You call yourself an average Joe. And I've been asked quite often by people, now that I know about 9/11, what can I do? And my basic answer is a little bit of a cop-out, but it's the truth in that I can't answer that question because everybody brings unique skills, and you've got to figure that out yourself. There's so many good things that can be done on behalf of either researching or spreading the word. And you're an average Joe, self-proclaimed, but you've done extraordinary things. So you're a role model to the good here. What can I do? You've done a lot of good. Now, before the break, You mentioned the Genghis video, so why don't you explain that?
Well, there's a lot of people that should be acknowledged when it comes to really looking for the truth. Genghis' latest video, which is titled 9/11 Taboo, and can be found on livevideo.com, is a very good representation of what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
the no planes, and the total, there's not even an argument whether or not the video is real. It's not real. There's no argument to...
Well, we've won the argument, I'd say. The no-planers have proven fakery.
And people need to look at information that WebFairy has accumulated over the years. WebFairy.org, Nicole Hoff, Social Service, who did September Clues, all these people, yourself,
Ace Baker,
Wood.
Most recently, maybe, yeah, Ace Baker.
You know, Judy Woods, Dr. Fetzer, even Ace Baker, yes. All these people that are being deemed as disinfo artists are not the disinfo artists that they're being portrayed as. I've even been told, I've been called a disinfo artist, and I've been paid off lots and lots of money by the Loose Change crew to spread disinformation about no planes. Like, it's
mm-hmm.
ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, that's I call it McCarthyite tactics, because most of them will not engage on the content. They just throw these charges around,
mm-hmm.
right? And in other words, it's smear the messenger, because I really can't beat the message. And if I actually do talk about it, I'll get taken out, meaning humiliated. Here, you can't win the argument.
Yeah, and all these zombies will just listen to what their heroes say and not look into it for themselves.
No.
And I guess that's how they're controlling the information on the internet, is just to try and discredit people and give them the name of the disinformation artist.
Now, Genghis is an interesting character. Of course, I don't think that's his real name, I somehow suspect. But he is big on the no planes. I think done some very good things there, but he is very anti Dr. Judy Wood and the justification, the idea that some exotic weapon just unbonded it, you know, molecular dissociation. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I've looked at Judy Wood's information, and she, if anybody, has the credentials and the background to understand what she's seeing.
Right.
And myself, to speculate, yeah, I do believe that there was some sort of exotic directed energy weapons used, and people can laugh at that if they want, but there's so many telltale signs.
They need to look at the data, as Judy Wood would say. You know, look at the data.
The
data almost lead you without a whole lot of interpretation or leadership. The data speak for themselves almost. I hate to say that as an economist who is fond of theory, you know, connecting the dots, including a priori or deductive work, but it's really true. I worked very closely with her on the basic space, the... Oh, geez, what, I can't remember the name now, I guess, Star Wars beam weapon. Yeah, that was the title.
And I saw people, like, they took off with that statement, about Star Wars beam weapons and the whole space weapons, and, Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Fetzer talking about, plasmoids and this and that. They're just trying to describe it in a way where they can kind of give a description of something that's not known.
Right, yeah.
As a technology, yes.
Yeah, they're using ridicule as the most powerful weapon in politics, as they say.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, like, we're only focusing on the one aspect of the towers, where they're two distinct, separate incidents at the same time, but people like to categorize the first tower and the second tower as almost like the same thing. But they're two distinct, different events. We have the Pentagon, where that is a total sham of a plane going in, being able to fly at 6 inches off the ground and hit at the 45-degree angle and bust
mm-hmm.
through the walls with the holes. Yeah. You got Shanksville where there's a 20-foot hole with wingspan, with these cutouts of a wing.
Mm-hmm.
Killtown's very good on, he's a good person to look into for Shanksville, but overall everything, he's an exceptional researcher, overall. But
yeah.
The pioneers such as Webb Ferry, Nicol Hopp, Killtown, people like that, more recently Genghis 6199, with his videos and social service, all these people should not be discredited just because somebody says that they're disinfo artists or something like that. People need to really look at the information.
Yeah,
like I remember even at the beginning when I was looking into 9/11, you know, it seemed it was just too simple of a thing to realize that was a lie. There was something too simple about it. My friend and I spent hours and days and weeks and months looking at the videos of the planes and saying, there's something wrong with this. It's
mm-hmm.
not right.
Yeah.
You know, anybody that looks at it will just see that it's not right.
Well, this goes back to the proposition you gave us earlier in the show, and that is think for yourself. That's exactly what you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I first looked into this stuff, like I was, the first thing I found, you know, when I started looking to 911 after I just stumbled upon it, was loose change. Okay, you find that. Then who do you find after that? You find Alex Jones. And you have that whole 9/11 truth movement. Stephen Jones,
mm-hmm.
you know, the thermite sniffing physicist, that's like to call it. You
yeah.
know, like, these things will just keep leading you around and around in circles.
Well, yeah.
And then you have this video evidence of these planes. I don't care who made it or what, they're fake.
Right.
There's no argument about it.
Demonstrably fake. And the events as depicted officially and by the media, officially including NIST, are impossible. Physically impossible.
Mm-hmm. And even when you were saying when they sent you the response to the correction,
mm-hmm.
and they had talked about the deceleration aspect of it.
Right. They said you wouldn't expect immediate deceleration. When an airliner is in contact with this other body, a 500,000-ton steel and concrete tower, in other words, that at a minimum violates Newton's first law of motion, which, hey, if you apply a force, it's got to accelerate or decelerate depending on which direction the force is applied. So, yeah, it's an amazing thing. And even though they deny they're in accord with basic physics. So we'll return with Jeff Hill. This is your host, Morgan Reynolds, on the Dynamic Duo. We catch Jim Fetzer Tuesdays through Thursdays, and Kevin Barrett, the Boy Wonder, on Mondays and Fridays. I'm filling in for Jim this week, and my guest is Jeff Hill from Sault Ste. Marie, Canada. By the way, Jeff, that's in Ontario, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a province, and it's huge, isn't it? So square miles must be 10 times most nations.
Well, I guess that's our biggest province, I imagine.
Yeah.
We're right on the border with Sioux, Michigan. They call us the Twin Cities.
So here we are in our last segment, and this is our last opportunity here today to get to other calls that seem interesting. What comes to mind?
Well, one of the newest ones was from another amateur video guy, but his name's Devin Clark, okay, and he took one of the videos
mm-hmm.
that was that shows the plane going in, and it's the exact same shot as CNN had when they showed the plane going in 6 minutes after the actual fact. I talked to him, and he ended up, there's a big discussion about it, a 23-page thread on it on 911movement.org, and he is just the biggest perf we've ever ran across so far. Like, he's a video animation artist, works for MTV, Nickelodeon, stuff like that. Friends with a guy named Timothy David Whitten, Whidden, they started going on their blog the next day after I talked to them and wrote a big thing about how, you know, they don't know why they're being bothered about this video and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, he took all his YouTube videos down, showing his plane impact. He took down his blog. He took down everything, and a bunch of people on 911movement.org just kept digging and digging, and they found all these ties with, they worked for a company named Wave Express and this and that. And
the ties, the like media the ties? They're discovered media ties or
other military ties. Industrial ties?
No, from the military to the military industrial complex.
Yeah, and they're almost like the little lackeys of the whole operation.
Like
the bottom of the barrel.
And yet, superficially, they were posturing what as civilians, amateur photographers in a fortunate location and time.
Yeah, he was in One Penn Plaza, and he captured the plane going in. But you could see on his video the plane. Web Ferry calls it the hippity hopper because it jerks motions. There's not a good motion with it. There's so many discrepancies about his video that that again is ridiculous. Social Service did a video on his video. It's called 9/11 Amateur. You can find that on livevideo.com. And he also came out recently with 9/11 Amateur Part 2, where he dissects the Nod A footage of the first hit, which no one really talks about. But that has just as many anomalies in it as the fact that
right.
You know, the laws of physics were broken when we saw the second plane hit.
What does Social Service say about this, whatever it is, the what's it, that's up in the air that people claim is Flight 11, an American Airlines 767. Does Social Service arrive at any interpretation of what those pixels are?
Well, he doesn't, he doesn't speculate on what the pixels are. He just shows how the hole in the building was there, came after the plane went in, and there was a secondary explosion on it.
Oh, okay.
So there was the main explosion, then a secondary explosion that kind of made this hole. WebFerry has a website called Missilegate.com, which people could look at, but you know that the plane is not a 767.
Oh, right. It's hard to make out what it is.
And even, like, I heard you had talked before about the BTF database, Bureau of Transportation Safety, where 11 and 77 weren't even listed.
Right. Two American airliner flights are officially non-existent because they are not in the automated BTF database, right?
Yeah, and I'd even made a call to them, and I asked them what it means when you have zeros across the board. And it means that the plane didn't fly that day. Well, okay. Well, those same planes had zeros across
the
board.
So an American Airlines representative made that admission in one of your cold calls.
Yep. Yeah, you can find all the different calls in their entirety at just go to pumpitout.com and click on the phone calls button. It'll take you to the forum, and there's a whole bunch of them. There's still a bunch of that I haven't put up, but I will put up, but... I mean, I always thought it was better than, like, just writing out, oh, well, I talked to this person and they said this. When you can actually hear the tone in their voice and everything, it makes much more of an impact and you understand more.
And it has media friendliness, right? I mean, reading is one of these declining skills. Listening, I hope, is not declining at the same pace.
Well, that was the one loophole I found about in Canada was you only need one-party consent to record a phone call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an issue down here in some states.
Although the NSA and everybody, they can record every phone call you make and everything.
Oh, yeah, right. The double standard, isn't it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the government's lawless, unrestricted. Yeah, you mentioned earlier in the broadcast regarding criminals have taken over the government. Well, you know, what is taxation but theft? You know, they say, well, you get to vote for somebody every couple of years. Well, yeah, right. Now you have taxation with representation that is outrageous.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch how this new theatrics of the election will be played out and see what happens. But
Well, yeah, I'm not much of a voter anymore. I'm disillusioned on that front. But yeah, even Ron Paul, of course, won't touch the truth regarding 9/11.
No, I mean, exactly. And after he decided that he wasn't going to talk about it, or if he was going to dismiss it or insult it, he was good.
In fact, it's a little discouraging. I like Ron Paul on many issues, especially on economic policy, but he seems to peddle very strongly the blowback thesis, which supports the idea that there were Muslim hijackers on airliners. So it leaves the fundamental motivation for our American preeminence.
And like you have stated before, if there was no planes, there was no Muslim hijackers, and there was no,
right.
You know,
yeah.
There's no Muslim extremists, there's no war on terror.
Right, and if there were no planes, you're just one jot, if that, close to proving up the media, a complete state-run and liars that support the ruling elite and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, like I've proven time and time again to myself that the whole thing's a lie, and it's a way bigger lie than most people can imagine.
Yes, I'm with you, because actually the when you talk about hey, no planes, that was a critical part of the hoax, and then the idea that some exotic black technology was used to poof or disappear the towers as well as substantial parts of the other WTC buildings, well, that both of them are so hard to accept, and the media, of course, it laughs you out right out of court, even though you can prove both propositions, and both really lead straight into the perps. Whereas, let's say thermite, which is available on eBay in the formula, leads nowhere. Doesn't lead to any obvious perps.
Well, yeah, I hope people can think for themselves, and they go and check out your information on nomoregames.net and Webfairy, Killtown, Nico Hoff, Social Service, Genghis.
And pumpitout.com with Jeff Hill. Thanks so much for being our guest on the Dynamic Duo.
Thank you very much, Marty.